Welcome to Celebrating Whole Health, a program focusing on remembering, reinvigorating, and creating a renaissance of relationship-centered whole person healthcare. Each week, we profile the work of a nurse dedicated to providing compassionate, patient-centered care. I'm your host, Georgiana Donadio, director of the New England School of Whole Health Education in Boston.
My guest today is Dion Amey. Dion is the current, past president and elder advisor of the American Holistic Nurses Association. With over 45 years of nursing experience, Dion has combined her passion for nursing, education, public health, and theology into a specialty practice of psycho-spiritual nursing. A registered nurse and ordained minister, she views our human experience as spiritual beings having physical experiences. And her published work, Good Grief, is both healing and uplifting, providing food for thought, heart, and soul. Dion's work and her life are role models for holistic nursing at its very best. It is my great pleasure and privilege to invite back and say hello to Dion Amey. Hi, Dion.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for being with us again. I'm so pleased, given the feedback that we had about our initial interview. The nurses just loved it, and I loved it, and the producers loved it. You were wonderful, and we're really excited that you've come back to share your wisdom and your wonderful words of healing with us. Since we last spoke, tell me what you've been up to, because I when we spoke the last time, we talked a lot about the work that you're doing in terms of your ministry. Would you bring us up to date as to what you've been doing in ministry and holistic nursing over the last few months?
Well, the last few months have been enormously busy for me as I was concluding my year as president of the AHNA, and the Holistic Nurses Association has been going through marvelous growth and change and in some way redefinition and re-expression of ourselves in the world. So that has really taken the bulk of my time. Other than that, I've continued with my ministry at the God Space Center for Healing here in the little church I built in my backyard in New Orleans.
Isn't that wonderful?
Do meditation and healing services there. I continue my practice as a healing touch practitioner. And I do some part-time visits, home health visits, as a staff nurse in seeing patients for a home health company here, about 16 hours a week of that.
Isn't it wonderful that you are still working? When we talked the last time, you said, yep, I'm just going to keep working.
I love what I do, and I feel really privileged to be allowed to do. And I'm back with the school where I had originally gone to nursing school. I'm with the hospital, rather. They no longer have a nursing school, but I'm with that hospital. So it's a sense of having come full circle, and it's deeply meaningful to me right now.
When we spoke the first time, you made it very clear that all that you do is so integrated so that there's no separation between the spiritual work that you do and the holistic nursing work that you do in essence. Of course, there's the practical part and the clinical part of nursing, but that it's really a way of life for you, and it's a way of being for you. How are you finding that you are kind of segmented in a way, because you go into your ministry in the church that you've built at your home, and then you go into the hospital. How are you finding that segue? I mean, how are you able? I'm sure there are nurses out there who want to know. How are you able to integrate that and make those segues and make it all blend together? Because I know we all struggle to do that and to make it, you know, a kind of a seamless thread in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, my interest very early on, as I shared with you in our earlier conversation, was in the psycho-spiritual component of nursing care and the relationship of the nurse and the patient or family or client. And so when I started with nursing in that way and then later went to seminary and then much later after that became ordained, that all seemed like a really unitary experience expressed in different areas, if you will. And you dress a little differently for those jobs.
Yeah, I'm sure.
That's probably the main thing. But certainly, I see my ministry. I was ordained to the healing ministry specifically. And so I carry that with me to my patients, to their homes. I do see people at home, not in the hospital. So I'm able to bring that same awareness, whether we ever talk about it or not. I think that's a really important clue and key for all nurses to know that it's not what we say necessarily or even always what we do, but who we are in the doing and how we perceive ourselves and what our internal world is. There's a lot of studies now to support how the ways in which the internal life of the nurse impacts upon the internal life of the patient, and is probably really the key to holistic nursing.
That is fascinating. I mean, what you just said, who we are in the doing, and about these studies. Do any of these studies jump off at you, the names or the references? That is a fascinating bit of information, and I know that we would all love to know more about it. I didn't realize that they were studying, I mean, of course, the intentionality. I mean, we know it's intentionality, and we know that that internal life is what we're thinking and what we're projecting and what have you, but I didn't realize they were actually doing studies. Could you share a little more about that?
Well, I can't quote for you exactly off the top of my head any of the studies. I've learned to not fill my head with too many facts so that I can be a little bit more in the moment and more attentive. And when I need those kinds of things, I look them up.
Right, right.
Either
exactly.
In references in books. Certainly the materials put out by Healing Touch International show a lot of studies about that. We are hearing more and more from the writings and the lectures of Deepak Chopra and Andrew Weil and others on that phenomenon. And the placebo effect, for example, I think is a part and a piece of that, that how what we perceive is happening actually can happen. And since we are connected to people energetically, I think that's the key, that how we are when we go into a patient's personal space is going to affect the outcome of that interaction. And I believe, you know, the effect of the medication and the effect of the treatment.
Well, that's an absolutely wonderful body of reference and information, and I do hope at some point that the American Holistic Nurses might make a white paper, put together a white paper on something like that. Wouldn't that be marvelous?
That's a wonderful idea.
That would
be. We certainly
have
enough of the information to put together to do that.
Yes, well, that may be. I know that you are functioning as an elder advisor for the AHNA at this moment. Yes, and it may be a project that you all might be willing to take on, because I know many nurses that I have the privilege to speak to and talk to are very hungry to have this information and to have it in a way that they can bring it to their hospitals, they can bring it to their practices with the doctors that they work with and the other nurses and say, see, look, this is real. The way that we think and the way that we interact with each other and with our patients makes a difference in the healing outcome. So I want to put in a vote for AHNA considering doing a white paper on such a wonderful topic, because I think it would serve all of us.
Now, well, it's a grand idea. You know, one of the problems is that in trying to do scientific research on these qualitative phenomenon, it sometimes does get difficult.
Sure.
In terms of measurement, but there are many, many, you know, philosophical writings.
Right, but I was referring to is, if there are these studies that have been done by Healing Touch International and Dr. Chopra and what have you, wouldn't it be grand for someone to synthesize that and
pull
put it
that
together?
All together? It certainly would.
You know, and to share that, because I think that we are all hungry to understand more deeply how our what you referred to as the internal life and the intentionality, how that. I mean, really, when it comes down to it, what more do we have to share with one another, you know? Because you spoke to that the last time we were talking. You talked about what our gifts are to share with one another, and that this internal life, or our soul, if you will. You know, who do we bring to the healing experience?
Yes.
Who do we bring to nursing? And you really expounded upon that wonderfully. So, you know, I think that, that is a theme, hopefully, that we will hear more about in the future. But I want to invite you to talk to us about good grief, because we had such incredible response to that. You read to us a wonderful piece of your published work, Good Grief, which I believe was a homily. Was it one of the homilies that you did?
Yes, it was a sermon.
Yes.
And it was published in Pulpit Digest some years ago. And I'm working on that along with a number of particular poetic eulogies that I've been privileged to do for people that I'm trying to put together in one manuscript along with some other things, and I'm really hoping to seek wider publication for that this year. So I'm going to devote my year to writing now that I'm no longer AHNA president. I have a little bit more time on my hands.
Yes, yes. And I bring up good grief because one of the things that we want to have you speak to us about, which is essential, is grief, loss, and healing. We've been reading a lot in the paper about the abundance, if you will, of depression. Some of that has to do with the holiday season. So it seems any holiday season brings up its own resurgence of grief, especially around loss. And so we know that if it's wintertime, if it's the holiday seasons, and they're with us throughout the year, that people will be revisited or be revisiting this sense of loss and grief and despair and sometimes depression and sadly even suicide. And the work that you're doing is so wonderfully healing in how it addresses understanding this phenomena in all of our lives. We all have it. I mean, nobody, no one gets out of this life unscathed. So if you would be good enough, when we come back, we're going to take a very short break. And when we come back, Dionne, if you could begin to speak to us about your work in your ministry on grief and loss and suffering and give us some of the wonderful wisdom that we all need to really reassess and kind of maybe redirect ourselves as we deal with this issue, which is so close to, unfortunately, so many of our lives. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
This is Brad Paisley. A great song has a way of tugging at your heart, but nothing tugs at my heart like the kids who are being helped at Shriners Hospitals. I know firsthand because I'm a Shriner. The Shriners provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care to kids, totally free of charge. And they combine that care with progressive research and innovative teaching programs. There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. For more information, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Hi, I can't come to the phone right now because I'm abusing my children, not just verbally, but physically. I'll get back to you.
If only child abuse were this easy to recognize. If you even suspect abuse, call Child Help USA at 1-800-4-A-CHILD. We've helped millions of people help millions of children. All calls are anonymous and confidential. So call 1-800-422-4453. Child Help USA. Trust your instincts. A public service message brought to you by Child Help USA and the Ad Council.
And we're back. You're listening to Celebrating Whole Health. This is a program that focuses on reinvigorating, remembering, and creating a renaissance of relationship-centered whole-person care. And today with us, our wonderful guest is Dionne Amy. Dionne just finished a long stint as the president of the American Holistic Nurses Association and is serving as an elder advisor to AHNA. And today we have her sharing her wisdom with us about grief, suffering, and so many of the experiences that each one of us, unfortunately, is touched with throughout our lives. And Dionne, before the break, I said that when we came back, we were going to invite you to share not only your work, but some of your wonderful writing. So I want to turn the mic, so to speak, over to you and ask you to please, if you would, address this issue that I know you witness to every day in your work.
Well, I really can think of no topic of greater relevance to nursing practice than the understanding of suffering, sadness, depression, and grief. When you consider that any altered state of wellness is in some way a loss and in some way a threat to our very existence, it's not a big leap to realize that what we're really dealing with in interacting with patients on any level, even if it's for a wellness visit, is that dimension of the unseen, the dimension of the inner world, the inner life, the longings, hopes, dreams, and desires of a person. So they bring this with them, just as the nurse brings her inner world with her or him to the interaction. So the first thing, I think, is that we have to just know that and be willing to accept that that is the truth of the arena in which we work. Now, we cannot get away from that. To do anything less is to cheat ourselves of a redemptive experience, and to certainly deny the patient or the client of true holistic care. When we have just come through a holiday season, we were talking on the break about the great escalation in sadness and turmoil for many people in the holiday season. It's, of course, the time of greater darkness and winter and indrawing, and so there are a lot of things that happen to raise this potency for us. One big thing is our expectations and what we believe we should be experiencing. You can jump off from that, too, to realize that often we bring expectations into interactions with clients, and we want a certain outcome. You know, nursing now is all outcome-oriented, and so you have to talk about the outcomes of the actions. Well, too often we jump ahead to the outcomes, thinking about the outcomes, and we avoid the processes that will bring about good outcomes. The Buddha, in his Four Noble Truths, the first one was that we have to acknowledge the existence of suffering. And you have to say that and say it over and over and over and over again to really assimilate, I think, what it means.
And also, Dion, don't you think we need to recognize, this is, I think, such a problem for so many of us, don't we have to recognize that we're not the only ones suffering? Sometimes we tend to think that God has abandoned us, you know, the world hates us, and that this is just happening to us. Don't we have to recognize the universality of suffering as part
Absolutely.
Of the life process?
It is the great common bond of all who are born, of all humans, that we are born into this realm that along with growth, there is the continual letting go and the continual leaving behind of something, always, to move to the next, be it the next grade in school, the leaving home to go to kindergarten, the constant letting goes and changes, and then ultimately letting go of the physical life to be in pure spirit. So it's the sense of the acknowledging that suffering exists and then thinking about what it is that keeps us stuck in that, if you will, and out of a more enlightened, mindful, compassionate, loving, kind way of being in the world.
For the $64 million question here, you know, what,
you, what is
you
it
that is so important? What is it? What, you know, how do we get there from here, Dion?
Well, it's very different for everyone. It's going to be expressed very differently. The thing that holistic nursing and holism brings to me that helps me deal with this phenomenon is the acknowledgement that we are spirit, body, mind, a unitary spirit, body, mind. We're not a spirit and a body and a mind trying to get along with each other like siblings, one part more grown up than the next, if you will. But we are all of that, all at the same time. And so for me, the first place that I started for my journey was to realize that spirit, that the loss of spirit or that the need for spirit to acknowledge our spiritual self is the first, for me, the first getting off place. I mean, that is the point of place. I mean, that is the point of departure, the place that we must begin. People approach it in different ways. They try to decide if spirit is something we're seeking, like a relationship with a spirit out there, a spirit God or a spirit. And then others say that spirit is something we are. Like the Hindu teaching that we're sparks of the divine flame, if you will. So we come into this world, spirit. And all the great teachers and enlightened beings have taught of the kingdom of God within and the need for accessing that domain and dimension. Western theology has sort of, I think, mixed us up a bit, even though I am an ordained Christian minister and follow that teaching and tradition. I see in it many difficulties in the way that that gets interpreted throughout thousands of years of societal impact and the emphasis on thinking versus stillness or experience. You know, so many religious traditions pray in the Western world by laundry listing things to God or using lots and lots of words as if God didn't already know all that, versus the more Eastern understandings of contemplation, meditation, attentive breathing, and sitting in the moment and opening to the experience of divinity moving through us with the breath. Nurses and people in scientific disciplines are particularly at risk, I think. And so we're an endangered species, if you will, because everything that we are taught to do and use in our practice has to do with pathophysiology and techniques and, as I said, outcomes and those types of things. So it's in many ways structured in a very, you know, rational, concrete, scientific model. It's a real challenge.
Oh, for sure. And don't you think that
it's difficult to work in that and to try to be present in it from a really polar perspective, if you will.
Dion, don't you think that one of the reasons that current nursing today is suffering as much as, I mean, when we talk about suffering here, we're talking about grief here, we could talk about the nursing profession, which is experiencing so much pain, so much loss, such a terrible sense of not being valued, not being really welcomed in this spiritual way, in this very important way that we need to witness and recognize to one another within the profession itself. How do you feel about these as causes for what's going on within the nursing profession itself, let alone us as individuals?
It's heartbreaking. It is so heartbreaking to me to think about the way healthcare was practiced when I started in nursing back in 1954, and the environment in which we're asking, you know, healthcare to be given now. It is so much more, of course, high tech, fast paced, sped up, and I like to think that holistic nurses really know how to put the heel in healthcare. And we must reach more and more people and call them to the higher nature in themselves, to be willing to take the risks, to stand in the full awareness of what's happening in any given moment.
Yes, but what you said was, I think, is absolutely so insightful, that it's a very dangerous profession when you work in an environment that doesn't recognize the presence and the necessity and the critical nature of spirit. And so the nurse is in an environment that is very kind of dangerous for her health to be in if she's dealing with a, you know, an outcomes-based or an evidence-based environment, and she's not allowed to be a whole person.
Yes, and this is not in any way to disparage the people who legitimately are attempting, the CEOs and administrators of institutions and the practicing physicians who also want to be in the business of healing. But, you know, it's the business gets, it all gets caught up in how you make that happen. There are many, many institutions in this country that are now instituting complementary and alternative modalities and offering those to patients. There is such a resurgence of interest. I'm so thrilled to see what's happening. I think this is going to be a time of really cosmic enlightenment. I don't feel despaired at all. I mean, I see it as it is, but I think we're on the cusp of major growth and transition in healthcare. It's like we've pushed the other thing about as far as it can go, I think.
All right. Well, there are many different perspectives to that. I know here in the East, we have a lot of interest in alternative healthcare as a revenue source and as a reality of what the consumer is interested in. Unfortunately, almost all attempts at integration have failed terribly out here.
Yeah, I know.
Yes, and so I think that it goes back to what you said at the very beginning of the show, the internal life, the intentionality, what we're bringing to the mix. If we have programs that are designed to capture part of the revenue and not to truly acknowledge this wonderful spiritual and inner life of all of us, then in fact it will again fail. And so, you know, that becomes, you know, another issue. But all of this goes back to this main topic we're talking about, of suffering and of grief. How do we, whether we're nurses grieving our profession or whether we're parents or partners grieving our life experience, what are some of the tools that we can utilize to... You gave us one of them, and first one was to recognize and to acknowledge the existence of our suffering. And I know that there are four wonderful pillars of wisdom in Buddhism, and maybe when we come back from our next break, you'll give us some more. But we are hungry to hear from you the tools that you have shared with people to help them kind of transverse this dangerous terrain called suffering.
Well, what I can share with you is what I have found in my lifetime to work for me, and I would be happy. I'd be happy to.
Well, we look forward to it. We're going to be back in about 1 minute, so don't anybody go anywhere. We'll be back with Dion Amy after a short break.
This is Sam Hornish Jr. As a champion IndyCar driver, I've had many proud moments, but one of the things I'm proudest of is being part of the Shriners. Shriners Hospitals offer kids with orthopedic problems or severe burns world-class medical care that's totally free of charge. And their centers of excellence combine progressive research and innovative teaching programs. There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. For more information, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
I don't want my daughter to be labeled.
Hey, my son was just like I was in school. What's the big deal?
My daughter's just going through a phase. She'll get over it.
Kids with learning difficulties don't need excuses. They need help. Today, there are millions of kids with learning difficulties, and they're struggling in school. But the fact is, a lot of these kids are smart. They just learn differently. So if you're the parent of a child who's struggling to learn, the more you learn, the better off your child will be. If you act now and get the proper help, your child can do well in school and in life. So if you think that there's something wrong, do something right now. Get help. For free information on how to help your child, visit www.focusonlearning.org, www.focusonlearning.org, or call 1-888-478-MIND. Do it for your child. Do it for yourself. But do it now. A message from the Advertising Council and the Coordinated Campaign for Learning Disabilities.
And we're back. We're talking to Dion Amy. And Dion is sharing with us Her recipe for dealing with healing and suffering and transformation. So, Dion, during the break we were chatting, and I'm eager to hear your insights about this. And if you would share with us some of the stories that you've seen, it would be wonderful.
Okay. One of the things that we did talk about on the break was how does holism, or the concept of holistic nursing, impact on the issues of suffering, sadness, depression, grief? What can we do to get ourselves in the place that we can be the best that we can be and be whole people providing care to others? I mentioned before that for me the very first thing is to acknowledge the existence of spirit and the spirit domain, and I caution us not to get those words tied up with any particular religious theology, but in the larger sense, not of ideas about God, but the experience of the God truth within us, apart from concrete mental constructs. So that this is not to get involved in theological discourse, but to talk in a spiritual discourse, if you would. For me, once you acknowledge the place of spirit, that we are spirit, that we embody spirit, that is how our body expresses spirit, and that we embody, if you will, divine mind, that we are mind different from brain. We get the mental functions mixed up with the cognitive processes, but I like to think of mind as the larger aspect of divine awareness and consciousness. For me, it's a Trinitarian formula for people who prefer to conceptualize God, if you will, in a Trinitarian format. The mind being the consciousness and the creator, the body being the incarnated Jesus, and the spirit being the Holy Spirit. So it's a Trinitarian concept in a way. And for people who are worried sometimes about how this fits in with traditional theology forms, that is one way that I encourage them to consider spirit, body, mind, and that is God is all and everywhere. And then the next stage is to see ourselves then as a unitary whole being in mutual process with the environment, that we're not just moving through space doing things, but we're changing the energetic environment as we do those things. And it is our thought and intention that also alters the energetic environment. We have seen some of the studies on prayer and that plants grow faster when they're prayed for, and there have been other examples to show intentionality and mental thinking and awareness and being in a state of meditation and prayer and how that changes. So once we acknowledge spirit and then we see ourselves as a unitary being moving with the other spirits through actually the spirit soup, if you will, we're moving through this great energetic domain, all of which is spirit and life energy, and life is happening at all times, and the universe is expanding, and things are growing, and there is so much going on. So we come to that with a sense of humility and self-awareness of just how both magnificent it is that we've even been allowed to be here and have this experience. And then I think we have to decide what we're going to choose to think about. And, you know, it's been said that as we think in our hearts, so we are. It's very important that we think on the things that will give us hope and encouragement and beauty and truth and goodness, and hold thoughts of healing for the people that we work with. We can't see them as the terminal cancer in room 401, but a human being who is a whole, healthy spirit being living in a body that is challenged and compromised.
Oh, that's beautiful, Dion. I think that is lovely.
You know, and we always must go to them, and when we look at them, see the radiant, whole, healthy person. So what we think about is how they will feel. You know, it's if you look at your beloved and gaze at them with eyes of love, you know, when someone gazes at you with that loving, how warm and good and validated you feel. So if we go to people with the heart of that great compassion and choose to think about health, wholeness, that even when their body falls off and dies, they are whole, and that will go on. And then that's in our patient interactions. I think in our own lives we need to embody spirit with a passion. We need to see the spirit as deeply connected to our sexuality and our sensuality. Then these are, you know, the third chakra function of personal expression in the world. That's the third energy level in the body. And the second energy level in the body, where we have our feelings and sensuality and sexuality, we have to have passion in our lovemaking, but we also need passion in our friendships and in our patient relationships and in our approach to everything. It must be that sense of embodied connection that brings that physical dimension, if you will, that the physical feeling of connectedness into those interactions. And I think that's a key. A lot of depression is an emotional dysfunction of the third energy level, which is where we express ourselves in the world and claim our personal power. And that's a real problem for women in society that does not always traditionally encourage them to be whole human beings. And nursing is mostly a female occupation, I think, with 4 or 5% male.
4% male, yeah.
Yeah. So you look at this enormous hundreds of thousands of women socialized in the United States, primarily, who tried to find out who they are and how they are and who they will be in ways that can express that. So I think depression has its root in masking ourselves and in not truth-telling about who we are and in not being willing to heal the mind by going out of the mind, if you will. I always encourage clients that I work with to go out of their mind and into, and everyone always laughs. We do. I laugh, too. I say, we need to go out of our minds and into divine mind, if you will, to, you know, to let that presence be manifest in us in some way. And that there will be times that we suffer and there will be times that we're in a state of joy, but to realize that they're all connected and no one is more better than the next.
Well, what you've said is very, very powerful for all of us to hear, that making ourselves kind of invisible or small or masking ourselves or not being truly who we are. I think that, A, that is a very essential element of what women do and what we're encouraged to do.
No good for anyone.
Exactly.
To hide your light, if you will. You know, there's so many metaphors and sacred writings about that. To hide your light behind a bushel, to keep from being the fullness of what you can be, in deference to personal, to acceptance or personal or approval of others, is ultimately going to cause you to be very, very sad and depressed. And the other great aspect to that, you know, the spirit, the embodiment of spirit in an erotic, passionate involvement in life in all aspects, the unitary wholeness, going out of the mind, choosing what we think about, and then the other is the the true ongoing self-examination and really making forgiveness a way of life. I think without that, I believe we're doomed if we can't do that, that we must forgive ourselves for the times when we couldn't do it as well as we did. I can look back in 45 years of nursing practice and think of many situations that, oh, if I could only have a chance to do that one again. You know, it could be more full. But I know at the time I was doing it to the degree of my capability at that time. So we have to forgive ourselves for mistakes that we've made and surely be willing to open our hearts to forgive others. And that it, when we stay in that, then I think this other work becomes possible. And sadness and depression, it just goes away. It does. Now, there are clinical chemical imbalances, I'm not denying that, that really do need medication and must be addressed from a pharmacological viewpoint. And it breaks my heart to see the people who suffer with that because it's grievous. But even when people are being medicated, I think that this other work also needs to go on so that it'll take root in the personality and grow into something beautiful.
Well, Dion, you have just said you've said so many important and profound and valuable things that when we come back from our next very short break, we want to talk about these things because you've given us a challenge in a sense because when we do let our light shine, when we are out of our minds and being ourselves and unmasking who we are, we've all experienced the kind of intentionality and feedback and resentment and sometimes anger and jealousy that occurs when we unmask and we are who we are. And I think that we would love to spend the remainder of the show talking about, you know, what do we do when that happens? What do we do when we go out on the limb and we become the pariah of the nursing staff or we become mm-hmm. the individual, you know, who is really taken to task for doing that? So we're going to take a one-minute break. We're going to come right back because we've got much to talk about, and you've really opened up an incredible conversation that I know everybody is all ears for. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hey, you seen Ronnie lately?
No, so?
Well, I hear he's totally buff now.
Ronnie buff?
Totally history buff.
Whoa, here he comes now.
Hey, lovelies. You know, I was just thinking about the founding fathers.
Wow!
Tough call in the 1780s about who gets authority. Shaking new federal government or the established power of the 13 states. Kind of makes you think. Well, gotta go.
Smooth! He is so buff.
So history buff.
Wow, but how?
He's been working out at LOC.gov, Library of Congress website, Whole American Experience in film, photos, music, and fun-filled facts.
Whoa, check out Clarence.
Hey, love to talk, but I gotta go exercise my mind at LOC.gov.
Swoon!
Want to get really history buff? Visit LOC.gov, the Library of Congress website, and find out more about history, America's great national pastime. A public service message brought to you by the Library of Congress and the Ad Council.
Okay, so what do you get when you cross a ballerina with an insomniac? It's someone who'll dance the night away.
Yeah, I gotta know.
And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers and their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. All right, so what do you get when you cross a barber and a chef? A meal with all the trimmings. And that's what they're serving at a local youth center. Local merchants came together with their community coalition to make people's lives a little better. Now, what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, happier, drug-free communities, especially for kids. So with your civic group, club, PTA, even your employer, contact your community coalition at helpyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
And we are back, and I have to tell you, we have had the most exciting conversation at the break, and we want to jump right into that conversation because we were talking to Dion about our fear of abandonment, our fear of rejection, when we unmask ourselves, when we go for it, live in our passion and be who we are. Holly, our producer, was saying, well, how do you, you know, encourage people to take the risk of doing that when it's so difficult that when you do it, you have all this kind of fallout from it? So, Dion, unfortunately, we're putting this right back in your lap, and we're going to ask you to respond to that.
Well, I can respond to it first by saying, of course, it is an enormous question. And it is the subject of many, many, many talks and conferences and sharing times and gatherings. I know when the holistic nurses get together, there is most often support and fellowship for one another. So, of course, one of the things I can certainly say, and it's going to be a brief advertisement for the Holistic Nurses Association, is that one thing you can do is from the beginning, have some support system in place for yourself. It may not be at the work environment, but it can be a group such as the Holistic Nurses Association, so that there are people with whom you can dialogue and with whom you can share these passions, share experiences, and get support for the journey. We live in communion. We live in community. The other is to truly, first of all, examine your heart and your intention in being this radical or revolutionary or outspoken person or taken off the mask, patient advocacy sometimes. Just to be a patient advocate and help a patient stand up against a system or a physician to ask questions can be a daunting experience for a nurse. That patients deserve to have their questions answered, for instance, and to stand with them and help them get the answers they deserve. You can often be ridiculed and chastised for that. So you have to get to the point where you maintain a heart of love and compassion toward the people who can't accept a truth that you might have come to, so that it doesn't disintegrate into an argument, if you will.
Yeah, that's really hard because we're also wired for that acceptance
thing, aren't
we? Of
course, and we want that, you know, rational, yes, but let me tell you why I said this, but this is what I meant, that sort of thing. So it's a great temptation, and part of it comes from, I think, staying rooted in your own truth. Ways that you can do that are simple little techniques: keep both feet flat on the floor. You know, if you notice the way we often stand, we shift our weight from one foot to the next, or we cross our legs, or we do something so that we're not totally grounded. So grounding and breathing, I always try to take at least 3 deep breaths before I'm going to enter into a situation that I think is going to be particularly challenging. To take a moment to breathe before we speak, so that we can come from the place of truth, to hold the outcome, the highest, best possible good for this situation, in mind. And sometimes politics gets involved.
Unfortunately,
it's not all just heady spiritual woo-woo stuff. I mean, you have to consider the political implications. Are you going to win the battle but lose the war? I don't really like that military metaphor, but I think we can understand what we're talking about when we say that. So we have to be, I think, somewhat careful and live the truth ourselves. You know, we have to look healthy, feel healthy, have attitudes of optimism and love and encouragement toward other people. And I think that those situations, that internal environment of a person puts out ripples and waves that begins to slowly alter. And if it doesn't, if you feel that you're in an environment that simply has shut down against that, you may need to find another environment.
I think that's a very important thing, that I think we all need to remember. You know, we as females have a tendency to always feel that we have to heal it or fix it or make it right.
Oh, yes, and that I'm going to be here, and I know if I just do it long enough, you know, everyone will come to the truth and the light. But if you think about the way that you came to the truth and the light, it was probably a process that dawned on you over many, many, many years.
Exactly.
And so one interaction, or two or three, is not likely to radically transform, you know, a whole group of people if you have no other cohorts or allies or people that understand. You may need to really rethink the environment that you're working in.
And that is even true in families, which brings up a very important point to all of this suffering and, you know, the things that we go through and we see going on in nursing. Many nurses and many people in healthcare are wounded healers. We come from environments where we have very dysfunctional families. We learn dysfunctional ways of being. We learn dysfunctional ways of getting acceptance. We learn dysfunctional ways of relating and thinking internally of the way that we, the thoughts that you were talking about, those thoughts that we generate that actually create our lives. So we have people who are very drawn to serving others and trying to really heal themselves in their effort of healing other people.
So absolutely.
So many of us enter into a profession that continues to make us push the rock up the hill. You know, it's the myth of Sisyphus.
Mm-hmm.
We come from broken families. We enter into a service profession, which unfortunately sometimes continues the perpetuation of that dysfunction and does not encourage us to heal ourselves, to be whole as people, for us to be out of our minds or to be passionate or to be our whole selves. So I think for nurses,
you know,
and I really would love to hear your comments about this. I think for nurses, this is a critical thing.
It is such a vital. What you're talking about is so crucial, Georgiana. We all are wounded. Everybody on the planet is wounded. Even people who lived in the finest, most seemingly functional families carry with them wounds and hurts and losses and disappointments. That is the existence of suffering, remember, is the basic premise that everybody's gone through something. Some are certainly more inflammatory than others. So knowing that everyone in there is wounded, then it becomes, how do we let those wounds inform us, nourish us, encourage us toward a healing model? So many people just want to relate, you know, out of their wounds. They want to stay that way, out of fear. I mean, I think fear is probably what keeps us trapped in that.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's, again, it's that will, you know, the use of the will to have a, what I call, in my understanding, you know, redemptive experiences with other people, to really be fully present, and that sometimes that's going to hurt. And sometimes to be fully present is going to break your heart. And you will weep with people. And you will go home and weep for yourself. And that's okay. That these tears are very healing. And they wash over us in ways that nourish and sustain us. And not to run from that. To not put so many walls up that we can no longer be moved to great tears of compassion, and sometimes that's a very hard thing to do.
Well, I think you've touched on something so important. The fear, you know, the fear and courage. It's the yin yang of that whole thing. It's like we need the courage to be able to step into what we know will heal us, and yet the fear that we have, the need for approval, for acceptance, to belong, not to hurt, not to be rejected. The fear of that is so antithetical and is so really in opposition to the courage that we must manifest to step into the realm of truth, of our own personal self-truth. That I think it's good, though, that we're talking about this and we're articulating something that each and every one of us struggles with on a day-to-day basis.
Everybody. And you said before we began this interview, you talked about everybody has a story. And I know that anyone who listens to our conversation has a story of inestimable worth and value. And that living that story and understanding it and fully claiming it, you know, claiming the reality of who you are, how you are, where you came from, what you endured to get to this point, and blessing it, forgiving it, you know. You've got to forgive it to move ahead to something else. And if you're mired in annoyance and resentment that you got dealt the hand of cards that you got dealt, then I think you miss the meaning of your life story. I choose to believe that we were all given, that what we get has purpose. If I didn't believe that everything had a purpose, even a horrible work environment, if that's where you find yourself, that there is a purpose in there and there is a lesson that you can learn there. But then when you learn it, you got to move on to another lesson. You know, that's also part of it.
Well, it is hopeful as we come to the end of the show that we can talk about and acknowledge very publicly in this conversation that we're having that each and every one of us, no matter who we are, no matter where we're from, no matter sometimes how good our lives look, or sometimes no matter how bad our lives look, that we're all equally struggling with the reality of how do we become more fully and wholly ourselves? How do we deal with the suffering of life? You know, how do we come to terms with what the meaning of life is? You know, Marianne Williamson, I love her comment. She said, we're all just rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, you know? Isn't that wonderful?
That puts it very nicely.
You know, we're all just
does.
Rearranging
it's
the deck chairs.
It's a very insightful comment.
Yeah, because in a sense, and don't you think that this is a big piece of what happens? We always think that we've been somehow singled out. And that,
yeah, why me?
Why me? And then we look at each other and we say, oh, but he has it, she has it, they have it so much better. But Dion, as always, I've had the pleasure of speaking with you several times, and it is always so, I feel so good finishing our conversation and finishing this interview. I'm sure the audience is feeling as uplifted and as, you know, encouraged to go out there and to try again and to find a new way of being in our story and in our lives. So I thank you